5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Chauncey says you're not allowed to play with us.
Oh.
Because you left him.
Maybe we shouldn't play together anymore, Chauncey. Maybe we shouldn't be friends.
No.
Guys, welcome to another episode of Katie Afraidy on the Fangoria Network. I'm your host, Katie Hettenbach. And you're like, it's just you. You don't have a guest. You're right, I don't. It's just me from the future, but that means we got a Zoom episode, baby. We got a Zoom episode because I had the honor, and I'm so honored, I got to watch Imaginary and interview director and co-writer Jeff Wadlow and actress and executive producer DeWanda Wise about the movie. And let me tell you, it was such a blast, and I'm so excited for you guys to see it. So without further ado, throwing it to Katie. Good luck, have fun.
Okay, how's it going, guys? Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah,
so I just came back from seeing the movie, which is always a good thing to do right in the morning, you know, a good horror film, yet in a dark room with a bunch of people you don't know, you know, watching a scary little bear. So tell me about the film.
DeWanda, you go. I want to hear you pitch it. I've been pitching it nonstop. It's your turn.
Here's what's hard about tell me about the film as an actor. You know, when you ask an actor, like, tell me about the film, every actor, I promise you, is like, okay, so when my character was 5 years old, like, it's impossible. It's so difficult to be succinct. But Imaginary is about a woman who moves back into her childhood home with her newly acquired family, I'll say. So she moves back into her home with her husband and her two stepdaughters, and chaos ensues. I always end with chaos ensues. That's the movie. You know, her youngest daughter discovers her character's childhood imaginary friend, and that's how we begin.
Beautiful.
And the friend who was left behind is not too happy that he's left behind. He's moved in with me now. So I have the man of the moment here in my office.
He's adorable. Okay. He's honestly a really cute bear, despite being a demon, but you know, he's adorable.
Despite being a demon, he is adorable.
Yes.
Have you had nightmares about that bear yet?
I mean, I've had nightmares about this bear, but not the kind of nightmares you're referencing. Most of mine involve opening weekend numbers and critical reviews and is there going to be a sequel or not. So they're a very different kind of nightmare.
Okay, that's fair, but still a nightmare, you know. Still, it's, you know, Jeff, you wrote the movie. Tell us how you came up with the idea and like where like all this stuff came from.
Yes, just to be clear, I co-wrote it with two very good friends. Greg Erb and Jason Ormland. And I had always wanted to do an imaginary friend movie, a scary one. And I had just signed this first look deal with Blumhouse after Truth or Dare and Fantasy Island. And so I was bringing in friends who are writers. And I just said, hey, got any ideas? And I'd known Greg since we were like little baby 20-somethings. And we had moved to Hollywood at about the same time and lived in the same little terrible apartment complex. And we're in the same flag football league. And we'd always wanted to work together. And so he came in with Jason and they said they wanted to do this like evil teddy bear thing. And I said, well, I want to do this imaginary friend thing. And we kind of combined the two ideas and gave birth to Chauncey.
So how did you come up with the name Chauncey? Because it's a name, you know,
it's a name.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like when I had stuffed animals, I would name them things like bunny or puppy, and they were a bunny or a puppy, you know?
You're a very creative child.
Thank you so much.
Chauncey is very talkative, yeah.
I couldn't tell you, to be honest with you. It was a Greg and Jason call, and they just said it out loud, and I went, yes, that is his name. And I hope, DeWanda, you would agree with this, but that's just kind of how I work as a filmmaker. I love collaborating. I love hearing ideas. And where I hear a good one, I just go, yes, that is what we're doing.
Yeah. There's something taunting about just like nerdy phonetic actor, nerdy. Something very like taunting about Chon, like the mm-hmm. aw sound. And then it's like Chauncey, you know what I mean? It's like melodious. It makes you want to create a creepy theme song.
Yes. totally agree. And it's, I don't know how much if you ever have watched paranormal shows, but oftentimes like the demons will be named like Steve. Everywhere of Steve. So it's like, I'm glad it, you know, Chauncey at least has some like weight to it, a little That's bit hilarious. Scarier than Steve.
Well, you know? I mean, Katie, if you'd written the movie, his name would be Bear.
So. I mean, Bear, so here comes Bear.
No. Okay, fair enough. Not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Clearly better than Steve.
Yes. Oh no, Steve's coming. Put him down the stairs. He doesn't.
Sounds like a Bumble first date.
Literally. Oh God. So, did you guys have stuffed animals growing up?
Oh, big time. And like, if everybody keeps asking, and I'm sure just scratch this off your list. Everyone's like, DeWanda, did you have an imaginary friend? No, I did not. But I did have Teddy Ruxpin. And Teddy Ruxpin was an enormous part of my life, like a big part of my life, little creepy battery operated animatronic 90s teddy bear. And I went like everywhere with him, you know, so just even seeing Piper Braun plays Alice walking around set and walking around with this teddy bear, and Jeff had her, there was like the set bear. And then there was like, we called him Fonzie. There was a whole separate, you know, just for her to get used to carrying around this this bear that was supposed to be her comfort blanket. Even watching her carry it around, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, fake Chauncey was the origination of Fonzie. And he actually became his own character in some pretty intense backstage shenanigans between Piper and the costume department. Which I can't even begin to tell you all the back and forth they did, but
not really elaborate.
Needless to say, Fonzie is far more of a psychopath than Chauncey, believe it or not.
Wow, which is saying a lot, because you know Chauncey, he got up to some shenanigans.
Yeah, well, let's just say if we made a movie about Fonzie, I don't think it would be PG-13.
Now, because the movie is PG-13, is there going to be a like uncut rated R version potentially?
No, I mean, it's just not that kind of movie. You know, with some of my other scary movies, I've done that because we did shoot a more intense version of the film, and then we got some pushback from the MPAA. But with this film, you know, we got our PG-13 on the first screening. It's just not that kind of movie. It's so psychological and supernatural, and it's much more about terror and dread and not knowing like what's around the corner. It's just not about like gore and sort of more exploitive horror moments, which I don't have a problem with. I have them in my other movies, but it's just not really this movie. This movie was much more influenced by the 1982 version of Poltergeist, which was, you know, I think famously one of the movies that kind of spawned the PG-13 rating, or had it was part of that conversation. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. I think I was like really surprised, if anyone was surprised, because I was like, do y'all see all these children in this movie? Like, what? You think we're just over here trying to traumatize young actors? Like, it's PG-13. It's going to be great.
But, you know, a lot of horror movies get their teeth taken out to get to the PG-13 rating. And that was 100% not the case with this movie. Yeah. Like, all that implied terror, all that dread, it's all there. I actually think it's a much scarier movie than any of the movies I've made with Blumhouse before, because we didn't have to water it down at all from the MPAA.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you didn't. This is going to come out after the movie is, you know, premiered, so we can spoil a little bit, but just like the slow reveal of, you know, Chauncey's final form, and like, you know, or his true form, I should say, in like seeing only bits and pieces of the monster is scarier than being like, let me just shove it in your face the whole time.
Yeah.
So
always.
Yeah. So, and that was all practical effects, right? With the majority of it was practical.
Yeah, I would say largely. I mean, I'm a believer in a hybrid approach. Like, I like a practical monster, a suit, a mask, a practical gag. I still think you ultimately end up have to augment it with CG in just really clever ways, because the audiences are too savvy. You know, you can't just have some guy in a rubber suit. You know,
yeah.
It's not going to really work on for an audience. But you want that practical element so it feels grounded, so the actors have something to respond to, so it's a bang to the laws of physics and light is interacting with it in a real way. But then you do something cool, like you paint something out, you add some detail. You know, again, spoiler alert, but for like Chauncey's final form, what we did was, you know, the insides of his mouth are CG, the tongue, the drool, all that, but it's a guy in a suit with animatronic eyes and brows, and so the goal is to create something where you're not sure where the line is.
Okay, very cool. And
is that too serious of a film answer?
No, that was perfect. That was beautiful.
Okay, good.
And DeWanda, what was your reaction to first seeing, you know, Chauncey in his final form?
I think, you know, I'm going to do that thing where I don't answer the question you just asked me. That made me think of something. What was really, you know, a delight. I love watching directors direct, and, you know, a lot of working with practical effects and, you know, creatures on set, watching Jeff, you know, they have to be directed too. People don't really think about that, really. They don't really think about like how everything, like a director, you're like, oh, you direct actors. No. There's so many elements that really have to play. And, you know, there's the actor who plays our entity creature, you know, even seeing Jeff like direct him, the subtle movements, the like, okay, raise your right shoulder up, you know, playing with asymmetricality, playing with shadow, playing with like, you know, how the camera's moving, how they enter and exit, you know, as much as you add in post, you know, as much as you're kind of, it's like a hybrid approach, there's still so much that goes into pulling out these really, truly, especially as an actor being there to your actual question, you know, experiencing it, interfacing it, you know, there's a lot that goes into constructing that horror. And shout out to those performers, because Michael specifically is probably, you know, he plays the spider and our entity, and he's such a contortionist. So all some of that stuff that he was doing, and that, you know, Jeff was asking him to do, the like crawling on fours, on all fours, you know, Dane too, you know, who plays the large bear beast creature, you know, that work is really extraordinary and very taxing and sweaty, physical work inside of those suits. So shout out to them.
Great answer. And also, I love that you didn't fully, like, you're like, I'm not going to answer the question, I'm going to divert it. I love it.
You can run for office.
You should. So, as a kid, what were you afraid of? And then how has that changed to now as adults?
What were you afraid of, Jeff?
What was I afraid of? I was actually a really normal, happy, benign kid until I saw Poltergeist when I was like 6 or 7, and it truly messed me up. It really did a number on me. I had brutal nightmares for about 2 years after that film, and so I would say that was quite traumatizing for me. And making this movie has been really cathartic, because I've been able to kind of tap into some of that stuff. So that scared me a lot. If I'm talking about something that's not a movie, I don't know, snakes. I don't like snakes. The spider with that long, like, smooth arm. I don't like long, thin. I mean, sure, it's some phallic Freudian thing that can be dissected. Yeah, I don't like snakes. I remember as a kid, we had an encyclopedia. This was, you know, DeWanda, there was a time before the internet. I'm not sure you're familiar with it, but for us old folks, there was this thing called an Encyclopedia Britannica, and we had a set. And I remember in the A book, there's a picture of this anaconda and these two guys holding it. And it was like a, you know, it was like an, almost a 20-foot long snake. And it just, I did not like that.
That's so funny.
How about you, Dorma?
See, this is where, you know, when you're like, this is light and fun, I was afraid of real things. Like, I was, part of the reason why I love this movie and part of what, you know, drew me to it was because there are kids who in early childhood go through things that are unfathomable, like really difficult, real life, like losing a parent, like really hard things. And I mean, that's literally when I was just reading the script, when I read it for the first time. Yes, I was like scared. Yes, I was surprised. Yes, I was shocked, but I was also really moved by the heart of the movie, you know? And, you know, those were the things. I was afraid of real life stuff. I was like, you know, I grew up in Baltimore. I'm a Maryland girl. There was a whole lot to be afraid of. And just the nature of, you know, being a kid in an unsafe world, you know, it's like one of those very subtle, because obviously our movie is fun and entertaining and all those things, but it's such a like a micro theme within, you know, the construct of horror in general, you know, and something that so many of my favorite horror films really taps into, you know, in a truly, you know, even E.T., like even when I think about Spielberg and E.T. and, you know, those kids are having a hard time, you know, like childhood does not feel like a safe place. And I, you know, I really identified with that.
You know, when I do these joint interviews with DeWanda, I like to keep track of who wins each question. That's and really DeWanda totally won that question. She crushed me. I said like the cliche phallic snake thing. And she was like, well, let me tell you about crime and murder and real people problems, Jeff. So I would like to retract my answer and just abstain from that question.
Copy that. Copy
DeWanda just took me out to the woodshed on that one.
No, that's well, because no, everyone has their own answers. And some of them are, you know, more simple and some of them are more, I mean, I'm.
I guess, Katie, we know some of them are good and some of them are bad. Right? We've established which one was bad.
Yes, exactly. I would say mine would be like the dark. I think I've always kind of been loosely, but not of the dark, but of like what's in the dark, because my imagination. So,
yeah. You know. Do you still sleep? My mom does not mess with the dark. Like, she's coming in today, and we're going to have to, I have to like find some face mask because Margie does not mess with the dark.
You know, it depends. Sometimes I'm like, cool, I can handle the dark and I love it. But there's been times where I'm like, you know what? I think I'm just going to sleep with the light on tonight. Yeah. I think it's okay. Yeah. And just, yeah. It's a little spooky sometimes. You're like that. I know that's just my mirror. Right. But then you're like, is it though?
Just be safe.
It could be a man in a hat. Could be Chauncey. Yikes. I also have to say the costume department, I usually, you know, they kind of just, I don't notice that right away. Your outfits the whole movie, oh my god, especially the first one. You walked on
poor Jeff. Jeff was like, I love costumes. This is also why I love being an EP on this project, because I just you know, there are certain departments that I'm just like, yes, that's my whole bag, you know. And working with you, Lynn, man, we just had a field day. At one point, you know, Jeff was just like, do people dress like this? And I was like, we're artists, you know what I mean? Like, she's a visual artist. Her husband's a musician. Like, we have a little leeway here to like really play and say a lot about their personalities through wardrobe. So thank
you.
What?
Did you freeze? Jeff, what were you going to say? Say it.
It was a very funny moment, the one she's alluding to, which like it was the day before we started shooting. We were going over the final boards. Wanda was there with me because she was my partner in every decision we made, because she was a producer on the film too. And looking at the boards, and I'm just like, what I do is I always say to my actors, I'm like, you're your character's department head. And I tell my costume designer, this is the effect I want. I don't know, like, the difference between a scoop neck and a halter. I mean, it doesn't mean anything to me, but I know the result I'm going for. I know what I want the audience to think when they see this person. And I also have a very strong sense of color and balancing the image. But when it comes to the details of fashion, I don't know anything. And honestly, I don't really want to know. That's why I have an expert who is my costume designer. So it was like the moment before we start shooting, we're reviewing the final boards for everyone. I'm just looking, and I'm like, I'm standing there probably in like a gray t-shirt and khaki shorts and ASIC sort of dad running shoes. And I'm just kind of wringing my hands. I'm looking at these boards. I'm like, I don't know if like people dress like this. It's just, it seems like there's just too much going on. I don't know. I mean, everyone. And I said, I don't really know anyone who dresses like that. And I kind of looked around at my costume designer and our assistant designer and DeWanda and my assistant, Garrett, who's an associate producer on the movie. And they all were dressed like that. And I was like, I guess I do know people.
So it was just perfect, you know, honestly, like your first outfit you walked in with like the blue floral top and like the, I was like, I'm gonna buy that outfit right now. So
thank you.
And like, normally I don't pay any attention to the outfits. I'm like, I'm just watching a movie, but I was like, wow, everyone's really stylish in this movie and I identify with this. So I'm gonna,
Yulin is gonna love it so much. She really
so
is
wonderful. I also have to say, because it is such a big deal, but it was such a small thing, having your character's final battle outfit be a dress. I think that's such a big, it is such a big deal. It is. Why were you telling? Were you telling?
You know, I'm just going to sign off. I've totally lost this one. Like how do you, what do you call it when you just like, when you resign in like a ping pong tournament or something, or no, chess, when you resign, I'm just going to resign.
Okay.
You are killing this interview, Dawn. Yes. The dress. I was like, fair. I was only looking out for you. But again, we had a moment right before we started shooting. I was like, I don't know about this dress. Like, you're going to be on your knees crawling around fighting a monster. In my experience, actors are happier when they can put on knee pads and butt pads. And it's hard to do that in a dress. I don't think this is the right decision. And DeWanda was like, decision agent. I'm wearing the dress.
Trust me. It's the iconography, right? Like, it's like what people and what I knew they would respond to is, you know, you see her in this pristine yellow dress. It's so lovely. There were like 10 breakdowns of that dress. You know, it's Die Hard. It's Carrie. It's like you're creating this horror movie iconography where you're seeing this thing that, you know, you wouldn't normally see in a situation, you know, and really setting that up and even building it, you know, making sure that she was in a dress beforehand so that it doesn't feel like conspicuously out the blue, like not something she would wear or whatever, you know, was so important. But yeah, we loved destroying that dress. We loved it. We loved it so much.
But it's also such a big deal, you know, just to have a badass woman in a dress, you know, also not a heel, which I was like, thank God. Cause like, oh man, if you were to run, you're really,
what really leads into kind of some of the Alice in Wonderland imagery that we were going for, the Lewis Carroll references. And also I just love, because again, I am so into color, the way it separated in the Never Ever and just made her, you know, really Jessica, her own element in this very blue world. It was such a strong contrast. I love the choice and I'm so glad I was forced to make it.
It was good. It was good. And I'm glad you forced him to do it. So
he's like a listener. He's an actual collaborator, which you can't deeply underrated.
Exactly. Whether he likes it or not, right? So what was your favorite scenes to shoot on set and what were the hardest?
Favorites. Man, favorite scenes. I will say, you know, I could not wait, and I was correct. I could not wait to get to that Never Ever set. You know, just it was really special watching it come to fruition, watching it being built, because we literally, you know, we were shooting on one stage, so we got to literally physically see it happening. And, you know, Megan, as the design evolved, you know, we're shooting in New Orleans, and those the checkered flooring is kind of like iconic in New Orleans. It's everywhere, you know, you see it all over the place, and her idea just to expand the world with the clouds. So yeah, I just really couldn't wait to, you know, get on that set. Also, not for nothing, mostly because Jeff and I were both, you know, itching to turn this into an action movie, and that's where all the action was. So both of us were like, ah, you know.
Wait, you said favorite scene? Did you ask a second part to that question?
And hardest scene to film.
Hardest scene. Dawn, do you go?
Hardest scene. Yeah, the most challenging things were just these little physical moments where we had a couple of tricks and contraptions to go through in and out the doors, the blue doors. Mm-hmm. So the hardest one was we were shooting this this moment where you want to see Jessica enter one door like straight up, but the way that I was coming up through the thing, I was literally just entirely horizontal. So I had to do this at 3 o'clock in the morning. And that was crazy. Mm-hmm. It was wild. Like I am embarrassingly, as Jeff knows, I am embarrassingly a self-satisfied actor. Like if you ask me like, do you want to go again? I'm like, no, I thought I was great. Like I am horrifically confident. And that was the only scene, the only moment we shot where I was like, I went home with like my tail, you know, between my legs kind of thing, feeling horrible about myself.
You're crazy. You did great. You're crazy. Crushed if you it. If we hadn't gotten it, we wouldn't have left.
We'd still be there.
Yeah. I don't stop until we get it. My favorite scene? Oof, that is so hard. No, I mean, I really, as an artist, you know, this weird thing happens where you kind of both love and hate everything. Like you just, like you're excited because you bring all these ideas to the table, but then it's just so much problem solving. It's such like, I mean, I don't know if all filmmakers are this way. I tend to believe that they are. Like you just want to squeeze every drop of creativity and productivity out of every day. So every day, at least for me, is just an arduous exercise in plowing ahead. And the very nature of that makes it difficult. It's very difficult to make a movie. And so, especially on a limited budget. So I don't know. I mean, I'd be curious, Dawanda, if you don't mind if I threw it back to you, what would you guess I would say was my favorite scene to shoot? And what would you guess was the hardest scene for me to shoot in your opinion?
Some of the hardest were when we got to the Never Ever, just because one, it was a number of things. It was the crunch time of getting to the end of a production. We're working with kids, so we got to get kids off the clock. You know, working with kids' schedules is like really, it's a whole job unto and of itself. Shout out to August, our 80. So, you know, I would say when we got towards the end and some of the more really involved sequences, like the ones that were just like, we had practical effects going, we need to get lighting cues just right, an actor needed to round the corner just at the right moment. You know, those kind of precision things, it's the simultaneity that Jeff was talking about. Like there is, you know, there's deep satisfaction in when you nail it, but mm-hmm. getting to nailing it is like, man, it's a real, you know, it's a real task.
I would say a real challenging thing that you're referencing too, Dawanda, was there's a lot of moments in this movie where it seems like the coverage is continuous, but we're actually shooting different angles on different sets, often on different days. And it needs to intercut perfectly because I'm doing these cheats as a filmmaker where, you know, like when we're in the Never Ever and we walk into the New Orleans apartment wasn't attached to that set, right? Or when they go to the painting and they lift it up and they're looking into the basement was not attached to that set. So orchestrating and figuring out how we're going to get them there, cover the scene, which moments we need to be on which eye lines and which sets we're on when we shoot those moments. I mean, it was very much a puzzle. And I agree with Dawanda, our AD team was fantastic. I would have these lunch meetings every day. We shot in this incredible soundstage that had the offices like attached to the soundstage. And for me as a Blumhouse filmmaker, I'm usually shooting in warehouses. Usually they are condemned warehouses. So there are no like nice offices attached to the soundstages. Like you're sitting on, you know, a folding chair in a parking lot surrounded by asbestos usually at lunchtime. So to have these like nice offices, to have these lunch meetings was really refreshing. And we'd have these meetings and we would just figure out the puzzle of the next day. And then, you know, then compounded by like monsters and, you know, we had limited resources there. So like the spider, we only had, I think like four spider faces. And each time you put the face on Michael, once you took it off, that thing was destroyed. You couldn't reapply the face. So it's like the spider can only work 4 days. I'm like, well, we need to shoot this coverage of him on this day. And they're like, we don't have a fifth spider face. So it ain't happening. So figure it out. So just the puzzle of it all was very, very challenging.
Yeah.
My favorite scene, honestly. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. My joke was terrible. Go ahead.
I want to hear it. I want to hear it.
Terrible joke. Come on. I got to get some points on the board.
For all my scenes, but it was basically a whole movie. So go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead. Your joke.
You actually stole my answer. My favorite scenes were, honestly, the scenes where it was just acting, where it was just DeWanda, or it was just Piper, or Tegan, or Betty, or Veronica, or Tom, or Sam, or when it was just like, kind of just like, just a great acting scene. That was just such a pleasure to shoot because it was honestly not as technically challenging for me. And it's just fun when you have, you know, amazing actors to work with them, not only watch them do their thing because they came to set so loaded up with so many interesting choices, but then to get in the mix with them and talk about different options and how to modulate certain things. And I'm one of these filmmakers, I don't like to rewrite while I'm shooting. Like once we start shooting, the script is a script. Unless there's like a real problem we got to solve, I am not rewriting that script because I'm a big believer in you don't want the crew watching you rewrite. That's a waste of time and money. But also there's so many more interesting choices to be made on the day if you're not worried about the words. Like what is the dance between the actor and the camera? What is the camera seeing? What is the camera not seeing? What are we showing with behavior and blocking and lighting? And there's just so many choices to make and so much to explore. And I love doing that with actors like DeWanda.
Wow. Oh, DeWanda, you got a big smile on your face. I love it. Aw. That also showed with the oldest stepdaughter, your relationship. Then the dialogue, so snarky, like going yes. back and forth. I was like, wow, if I said that when I was little, my parents would have, I mean, not.
I feel like it doesn't, I don't have children in shows in that relationship between Jessica and, it's like, you don't even know what to say or do. You're like, this can't be right, but.
Yeah. Was any of that ad-libbed or was it all in the script?
No, oh, it was all written. It was all written by three middle-aged men, which
yeah. As it should, funny. Right?
Very impressive, actually.
That was, and the one line that had everybody in the screening room dying was when was it the I don't know the proper term the psychologist that yeah
yeah
that's
yeah that
she came in and she's talking to you, DeWanda, and she goes, has Alice taken any hobbies? Ventriloquism. We all were like dead for maybe 2 minutes. We couldn't stop laughing. That was really good. It was so, so funny. And it's about a spooky bear, you know? So you expect some silliness, but like up until that point, it was kind of silly, but like that line was like, okay, this is funny.
That's so funny. And I love hearing that because obviously if you're an actor, I mean, all of us were like, there were some moments where I was like, okay, this is funny. But for the most part, we were all so in it. Like we were all really in it. So I cannot wait to pass that on to Veronica because she was not trying to be a comedian delivering that line, I assure you. It's really funny. That's really great.
Well, look, there's two kinds of humor in my opinion, right? There's humor wherein you're going for the laugh, right? When you're selling out the movie, when you're Will Ferrell, you're Ben Stiller, like you will do anything for the laugh. And the audience never forgets that it's Ben Stiller playing make-believe in this movie, right? Or Will Ferrell playing make-believe in the movie. But then there's like a grounded humor that doesn't sell out the stakes, that is authentic to the story you're telling. And I don't think it means the movie isn't scary or you aren't dealing with real emotions. And some really terrible situations in my life, I was still laughing. Yes. Yeah. So I don't think... I think when people, and this has happened with some of my other movies too, where people talk about the laughs or the jokes. And like, it's weird that there's these laughs and it's a funny, it's a scary movie or it's an action movie and you're making a joke in this moment. And I'm like, I don't think it's weird at all. Like, that's what the human experience is.
It's also some of the scariest movies have the funniest lines in them unintentionally. And then some of like the like comedies have the most heartfelt moments.
Oh, absolutely. That's what you want. If you're telling a human story, you're gonna get it all.
Yeah.
You don't, you know, let's be clear. I don't want unintentional laughs. Like, if we're not, if the filmmakers are still hoping that you laugh with these moments. You know, obviously when we wrote that line for Dr. Soto, it's a funny moment. She just came out of this room with this like little kid, you know, doing the bear's voice. Like, I think that would be my first question. Like, can we talk about the ventriloquism that's going on in this household?
Which I was also surprised at how quickly she decided to tell you about Chauncey when her three granddaughters just got threatened. I was like, oh, you don't. I was like, dang. I mean, you know, good for you doing your job, but also it's a vague threat from a bear that's not really there.
But to be fair, man, Veronica Falcone was clearly like, I gotta get out of this house. She was like, here you go, girl. Good luck. Wish you best of luck. All best.
See you later.
You know, there was an earlier draft of the script where Chauncey came for Dr. Soto. There was like a whole sequence after that. Ultimately, we just wanted to get to the meat of the story, which was, you know, the Never Ever.
Wow.
So fun. So fun. I also want to say shout out to the hair and makeup department as well, because as a fellow curly head myself, we don't see a lot of curly hair on screen. And stunning hair, stunning now. But sorry, this isn't about you, Jeff.
You don't think my hair is stunning?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Curly hair is so important. And I grew up like hating my curly hair.
Absolutely. That was the same thing. It was like, you know, very deliberate choice. Trying to think of something that, you know, felt natural, just something that you felt like it was really evocative of, you know, who Jessica is, just this kind of like, you know, you want to feel this woman who, if not for this one thing, is free. You know, and also isn't the kind of woman who's spending every day like trying to press herself into submission somehow, you know? Yeah.
Who hates curly hair? I love curly hair. That's crazy. I'm probably as ignorant about hair as I am about costume and wardrobe and fashion, but I love curly hair. I think those people are nuts.
As someone who grew up with curly hair, I just, when you have curly hair, you hate it. And as soon as you get older, you're like, why did I do that to my hair?
Hate any hair, because I'm telling you, when it starts to go away, you're gonna miss it.
Love your hair, dang it.
Love it.
Okay. So we're winding down, but I have a few more questions for you guys. What would you say the moral of the story is?
Jeff, what's the moral of the story?
The moral of the story is don't play with toys you find in the basement. I think the moral of the story is an interesting one too, because I'm not a big believer in starting a story with a theme or a moral necessarily in mind. I like it when the theme or the moral emerges, because it honestly, it feels more real to me. It feels like it's actually a product of the work you're creating and the story you're telling. I guess for me, and also there's a subjective aspect to this. Like, I'm a big believer in this idea that we're not making a thing. We're making a thing that an audience experiences, and then the actual end product is the meaning they make when they perceive your story through the filter of their own life, right? So that's actually the thing that we're trying to get at. Like, if I made a movie and no one ever saw it, it'd be the biggest waste of time. Not because I want the gratification of people saying, sorry, Chance, but I want people to make that meaning. That's the point. That's why I don't make tiny little art films for myself. I make big movies for large audiences, because I want as many people as possible to experience them and make meaning. So I think the answer to that question depends on the person watching the film. For me, I would say the moral of the film is, you know, just to like hold on tight to the things in your life that are here right now, because that's what matters, right? Like, that even though Jessica was defined in many ways by her past, and all of our characters are products of their past, the past is not as important as the present, and the relationships and the dynamics that you're creating in that moment. And the final line of the script before we had this new epilogue scene, you know, when it ended with just the house falling before we did the additional photography, I wrote this line in the action that I said, you know, after Jessica said, let it burn, that the three of them stood there together, a family forged in fire. And I think that image, that idea, that feeling for me is kind of the theme, the moral of the film, that they were, after having gone through this together, they were a family.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, I have two morals that it could be also. One is, if you want to really bond relationships, especially between a stepmother and the, you know, her stepchildren, is have something really traumatic happen. Right? And then it bonds them. Or have your kids play with fire.
Pro tips.
A family forged in fire. You kind of just said the same thing I did, but just
actually,
which is why you have a podcast and I don't.
Physically play with fire. Burn. Yeah.
Get in there.
You save the day.
Exactly. So I always end my podcast with asking, are you afraidy or not afraidy? But I guess, would you say audiences are going to be afraidy or not afraidy of imaginary?
Totally afraidy.
Yes, so afraidy. I mean, my gosh, we should be shorting Build-A-Bear stock right now, because my hope is that no one ever looks at a teddy bear the same way again.
Never, ever.
What a great, oh my gosh, that's beautiful, wonderful. Snaps for you. Wow, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. What a great way to wrap up. You guys, thank you so much. This has been a delight. And
thank you, Katie.
Imaginary, can't wait for everyone to go see it.
Thank
you for all your kind words. We really appreciate it.
Wasn't that the greatest thing you've ever seen? That was fun, right? Who knows who actually won that interview? There's one thing I did want to say, though. And I forgot to say in the interview, I'm going to say it now. They should have put the movie out during, because John Krasinski has a movie coming out called IF in May. He should have put that one out. You should have put Imaginary out during that time, because it would have made headlines. Oh no, we bought the wrong tickets. Oh, we thought we were seeing cute imaginary friends and Ryan Reynolds. Instead, we got murderous Chauncey the Bear coming at you, eating your souls and shit. I think that would have been good. Anyways, guys, this movie's out. Please go see it. It is so freaking fun. And again, thank you to Lionsgate for, you know, letting me go see the movie. It was so fun and so hilarious to walk into a screening room wearing pigtails and everyone else was wearing suits. So that was good. That was funny. That was funny for me. On that note, guys, make sure to like, subscribe, all that jazz. You know the drill. Katie Afraidy on everything. And some shitty advice that I'll give to you. Honestly, Toy Story's real. And they're coming for you, so run while you can, or burn all toys, period. Just kidding, don't. Chauncey is honestly adorable. I would love Chauncey as a friend. I think he'd be great. And I don't know, maybe I just need a friend right now. Maybe I just need a friend. Anyways, on that note, guys, stay spooky and we'll see you next time.
But it was just my imagination.
Can I hang out with your imaginary friend?
He's not imaginary. He's not your friend.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.